Welcome to Accessibility Craft, where we explore the complex challenges and emerging trends that are shaping digital accessibility while sipping on unique craft beverages. This show is proudly produced by Equalize Digital, the most trusted name in WordPress accessibility. Join us every week as we break down accessibility news and share the expert strategies we've used to help make millions of websites more accessible. Grab a drink. The show starts now.
Welcome, everyone, to WordPress Accessibility Meetup, Web Accessibility 101, Small Things That Make a Big Difference with Maria Maldonado, Accessibility Specialist at Equalize Digital. We do have a sponsor that I want to thank today. That sponsor is GoDaddy. GoDaddy is generously covering the cost of live captioning and post-event transcription for this meetup. GoDaddy's mission is to empower a worldwide community of entrepreneurs by giving them all the help and tools they need to grow online, including a simpler, safer WordPress experience. GoDaddy provides a managed WordPress experience that is as easy as it is effective. The latest version of WordPress comes pre-installed with exclusive themes, plugins, and tools to get you up and running quickly with automated backups, updates, and malware removal, so GoDaddy pros can spend less time on monotonous maintenance and more time building their businesses. You can learn more about GoDaddy if you go to GoDaddy.com. I always ask if you are willing on whatever social media platform you're on to just give a quick shout out to our sponsor, tag them, and say thank you for covering the cost of captioning at WordPress Accessibility Meetup. It helps to let them know that I did what I was supposed to do and also that it is important and that we value having the live captions, which in turn helps them want to continue to sponsor. So if you're willing to do that, you can probably find them at GoDaddy, I would imagine, on most social media platforms. I am so excited to introduce our accessibility specialist, Maria, today. Maria is a seasoned web accessibility professional with a strong foundation in education. Since transitioning to the field in 2018, she has been dedicated to advancing accessibility testing and fostering digital inclusivity. She has a CPAC, WAS, and CPWA certifications. She possesses a comprehensive understanding of web content accessibility guideline standards and legal requirements. She manages all of our auditing here at Equalize Digital, and we're so excited to have her here to present. Welcome, Maria.
Hi, everyone. Thank you for joining today's session, Web Accessibility 101, Small Things That Make a Big Difference. My name is Maria Jose Maldonado, and I'm an accessibility specialist here at Equalize Digital, as Amber mentioned. Today, we're going to talk about web accessibility in a very practical and approachable way. My goal is to show you that accessibility doesn't always require a massive redesign or a huge budget. In many cases, small intentional improvements can dramatically improve the experience for your users. So one thing that I learned is that accessibility can feel intimidated at first. There are guidelines, technical terms, legal discussions, and sometimes people feel overwhelmed before they even begin. But accessibility is really about people. It's about reducing barriers and making websites easier to use. So today, we'll focus on realistic improvements you can start implementing right away. Here's what we will cover today. First, we'll define what web accessibility actually means in plain language. Then we'll look at some of the most common accessibility barriers users encounter online. After that, we'll focus on easy wins, small, high impact improvements that are often simple to implement but make a huge difference. And finally, we'll talk about why accessibility benefits everyone and not just people with disabilities. When we talk about web accessibility, we mean designing and developing websites so people with disabilities can perceive, understand, navigate, and interact with them. Disabilities can affect vision, hearing, mobility, cognition, speech, and more. And accessibility isn't only about permanent disabilities. Think about temporary or situational limitations. For example, trying to read your phone in bright sunlight, or watching a video without headphones, using one hand because your other arm is injured, being tired or distracted. Sometimes accessibility gets reduced to a checklist or a compliance requirement, but at the center of all of these are real people. For example, someone who relies on a screen reader, someone who cannot use a mouse, someone with low vision who needs larger text, someone with ADHD who benefits from clear structure, someone watching videos on mute. So accessibility is really an extension of good usability. When we reduce friction and confusion, everyone benefits. So we can say that accessibility helps everyone. One of my favorite things about accessibility is that many accessible practices improve the experience for all users. For example, better contrast improves readability for everyone. Clear navigation helps all users find information faster. Captions help people in noisy environments. Larger touch targets improve mobile usability. And accessibility also often supports SEO, engagement, and user satisfaction. So accessibility isn't separate from good design. It's part of good design. Now let's look at some of the most common accessibility barriers found on websites.
This episode of Accessibility Craft is sponsored by Equalized Digital Accessibility Checker, the WordPress plugin that helps you find accessibility problems before you hit publish. Thousands of businesses, nonprofits, universities, and government agencies around the world trust Accessibility Checker to help their teams find, fix, and prevent accessibility problems on an ongoing basis. New to accessibility? Equalized Digital Accessibility Checker is here to teach you every step of the way. Whether you're a content creator or a developer, our detailed documentation guides you through fixing accessibility issues. Never lose track of accessibility again with real-time scans each time you save, powerful reports inside the WordPress dashboard, and a front-end view to help you track down hard-to-find issues. Scan unlimited posts and pages with Accessibility Checker free. Upgrade to Accessibility Checker Pro to scan your website in bulk, whether it has 10 pages or 10,000. Download Accessibility Checker today at equalizeddigital.com/accessibility-checker. Use coupon code ACCESSIBILITYCRAFT to save 10% on any plan.
These include low color contrast, missing image descriptions, tiny text, poor navigation or confusing navigation, forums without labels, vague link tags like click here or read more, autoplay media, and keyboard drops. The good news is that many of these are surprisingly common and surprisingly fixable. You don't need to rebuild your entire website to make meaningful improvements. One of the most common issues is poor color contrast. And this happens when the text doesn't stand out enough from the background. For example, light gray text on a white background. On the screen we have a small example of the primary, secondary, and tertiary palette of a brand. In the secondary bottom, for example, the text is white and the background is gray, and it's very difficult to distinguish the foreground and the background. Designers sometimes choose subtle sort of colors because they look modern or elegant. But if users can't read the content comfortable, that creates a major usability problem. The small fit here is increased contrast between the text and the background. And that's a very small design adjustment with a very large input. And again, this helps everyone, not only users with low vision. Another common issue is missing or poor alternative text fringes. Alt text is what screen readers use to describe images to users who cannot see them. A file name like image123.jpg is not helpful, but a description like woman using screen reader on laptop communicates meaningful information. A good question to ask is, what information does this image add? And if the image is purely decorative, it's perfectly okay to use empty alt text, so as if the technology is can ignore it. Let's talk about keyboard navigation. Not everyone uses a mouse to navigate websites. Some users rely entirely on keyboards, switch devices, or voice controls. A very easy test you can do is to put your mouse aside and try navigating your website with using only tap, enter, and arrow keys. And the questions that you should ask is, can you reach everything? Can you see where the focus is? Can you open menus and submit forms? This simple test often reveals problems very quickly. Now let's talk about headings. A common mistake is using bold text to make something look like a heading instead of using actual headings, heading tags. Another issue is skipping heading levels randomly or using multiple H1s without structure. Think of headings like an outline. An H1 is the main title, and H2s are major sections, and then H3s are subsections. Clear structure improves readability for everyone. Headings are incredibly important for accessibility. They help users understand the structure of the page and allow the screen reader users to navigate quickly between sections. Now let's talk about links. Generic phrases like click here or read more can be confusing, especially for screen reader users who often navigate through a list of links independently from surrounding text. Instead, links should describe their destination or purpose. For example, a small fix for this issue is write something like download the accessibility checklist, view pricing details, and the impact is that screen reader users often navigate by links alone. So descriptive links improve clarity and usability for everyone. At this point, you may be thinking, there is a lot to fix. And that's true. Accessibility is a journey. But the important thing is that you don't need to fix everything immediately. Small improvements can have a huge impact. Start with better headings, improved contrast, descriptive links, alt text, keyword testing, form labels. Progress matters much more than perfection. Here's a quick checklist of easy accessibility improvements that you can start with. There are both relatively small tasks that often create immediate benefits. So first, I would say, add updates to meaningful images. Ensure that there is sufficient color contrast, not only for text and background, but also for graphical objects, for example, buttons, icons, or anything that the user needs to distinguish and to be able to interact with the site. Label forms fields clearly, for example, to make sure that the user knows what information is needed or what is the input that is required for them, right? Name, email, last name, etc. Use real headings. Please avoid user bold or styling to make it look like a heading. Just use a proper structure. Test keyword navigation. Avoid autoplay in media. And allow text resizing. This is very important for users with low vision or screen magnifying users, but also this is helpful for mobile and to have a responsive viewport. Even implementing a few of these can noticeably improve the user experience. And guess what? Accessibility is also good for business. When websites are easier to use, more people can access your content. Users are less likely to abandon tasks. Customer satisfaction improves. Search engines better understand your site. Accessibility can also reduce legal risk and strengthen brand trust. So an inclusive experience creates stronger relationships with users. Something else that I wanted to mention is that there are a lot of misconceptions around accessibility. One myth is that accessibility only benefits blind users. In reality, accessibility supports a huge range of users and situations. Another myth is that accessibility is always expensive. While large remediation projects can be complex, many improvements are small and inexpensive. And here I want to add something. If you think about accessibility and start with accessibility from the beginning, you don't need to rebuild your site, which is more cost effective because you're going to use more resources, more time, that's less effective. So in fact, thinking about accessibility from the beginning, it's not expensive at all. And finally, accessibility doesn't limit creativity. In fact, constraints often lead to clearer and more thoughtful designs. So, where should you start? My recommendation is run an accessibility scan. We have a scanner in Equalize Digital. Fix obvious contrast issues. Review headings, add missing labels, test with a keyboard, create internal habits around accessibility. And the key here is consistency. Accessibility becomes much easier when it's integrated into everyday workflows rather than treated as a separate task later. I always like to say that accessibility is a mindset. And in fact, something maybe anecdotic or personal is that when I started working in accessibility, it changed the way that I see it. The world, because I start seeing what could be fits in universal design or buildings and also in apps or model. So it's like a quick mindset that you can implement. And I really encourage you to start doing that with your teams. And you don't need to be like an expert or an approach a developer or work exactly where something like is directly attached to accessibility to include it in your daily tasks. I want I want to leave you with this idea. Accessibility is not about perfection. It's about progress. So every improvement that you make helps real people access information, complete tasks, and participate more fully online. And accessibility work is ongoing. Technology changes, content changes, and websites evolve. The important thing is to keep moving forward. You don't need perfection to make progress. If you like to continue learning, here are a few great resources. So you have the W3C Web Accessibility Initiative that provides foundational guidance and educational materials. Also, the Web Aim Contrast Checker is an excellent free tool for testing color contrast. And you can also find additional information or resources at equalizedigital.com. I have been writing a series explaining the Web Content Accessibility Guidance on Test Criteria one by one. I still have a large list to write. There are some trainings as well created by Amber that you may find helpful. And, well, I think that's the end. Thank you so much for being here today. I hope this session helped make accessibility feel more approachable and actionable. And even the small changes can make a meaningful difference for users. So I love to answer any questions you have or comments.
And there are a few questions. So I'm going to try and go through these that seem specific to the talk, and then there's some that are broader that we can talk on. So Barbara had said the slide about missing alt text seemed to say that using a descriptive file name means you can skip alt text. Did she misunderstand? Do you want to talk a little bit or go back to that?
Do they brought up images?
Yeah, I guess she was saying that she was looking at what was on your alt text slide. I don't know.
Hold on. Give me one sec.
Was a little bit confused about, does the file name mean you don't have to provide alt text? Like if you had a good file name instead of just image 123.
Oh, no, that was just, I got an example that, let me go a little bit more in detail with that. Well, I do a lot of testing, and most of the times what the screen reader does when there is no alt text is to try to figure out the name, and it uses the file name as, or the source name as the descriptive text. So that's why I use that example, image 123.jpg. So no, you need to, the alt is an attribute that you add in the code. So you need to use real text, a real good description. I like to say that, for example, if you were talking on the phone with someone and you are describing what you're seeing, that's a good alt text, because there's the best way to ensure that what is visually there is being described in text. Let me see, because I saw that someone writes on there. And you can leave the attribute empty. That means that you leave the quotation marks without anything inside. That's what I mean when I said empty, because that way the screen reader is going to interpret that image is decorative. So it's going to skip it. But you always need the alt attribute on images, even if they are decorative or if they are informative. Is that clear now, or do you have more questions about it?
I think that's clear. Yeah, maybe if she has additional questions. Yep, she said yes. So Steph had a question about link navigation. Stefan said, if a site has a section with three columns and the entire column is linked, but each CTA button says learn more. Steph's understanding is that the repetitive learn more is not going to be picked up by the screen reader. So I'm guessing maybe it's like there's an image and a title and a blurb like for a blog post and then it says learn more, but the link goes around the whole container. Steph said keyword nav doesn't pick up on the button within the columns. Like you can't tab to it because it's not really a linked button. Do you have any opinion on that sort of design?
Yeah, well, this is something that we always find in our reports for noting. Mostly when you have posts or cards, trial design, and you have the image, the title, and then a report. And that's something that we call redundant links because it's going to make the user have like, let's say in this example that I'm giving, it's going to give you three stops, right? The image, the title, and then the remark.
I have an example I could share.
You have an example?
This is a fake website, but like this is what you're talking about.
Yeah, you have an image, then you have a title, and then you have a learn more or a
story.
So that's really three stops for one link. It's not really a weak failure, I have to be honest, but it's really not a best practice to do it. So what we recommend is to have only one link. So the screen reader or the keyboard user only gets one tab stop. And something very important with the read more is that imagine that you are using a screen reader and you are tabbing through the site, right? So you're going to listen, read more, without context, unless you use our keys or trying to figure it out anything else. So what we always recommend is to attach or use an area label to that read more that is invisible for users, but is available for screen reader users, and give it the context. So in this example that Amber is showing, that read more would say, read more about the secret ingredient Top Chef's server, you know? So the user is not going to obtain only the read more several times without context. It's going to know exactly where the link is leading to.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think, so if you're doing card style, like she was talking about, where there's one link around the whole thing, then I would maybe argue, because at that point, the read more is just an element inside the link. And yes, you can't tab to it like she was talking about. I would probably be like, can we leave the read more off the design? It would be weird to have, like, let's say the link wrapped the whole thing and then it read the title plus the excerpt plus the author plus the date plus read more. Like, that's a very long link name. The other option potentially is if you don't have the read more visible, but you use that is the link, but it's kind of like an overlay. So all of these other elements can be reached and you could click anywhere, but this title wouldn't be a link. It would just be a heading. And if you're reading the page, you would just hear the heading and then you wouldn't actually hear the link until you got to the bottom with the screen reader, although a sighted person wouldn't see it and could click anywhere. I don't know if that totally answers the question about how to handle the cards, but I think that's kind of what I would say.
Yeah, also, if you don't want to use an area label, another way to handle is to use a hidden text for a screen reader. That's also is invisible, doesn't cause any issues with the visual design, and the text is available there. But something that I always say, honestly, is that if something is helpful for one user, it's helpful for all. So I try not to give extra information to the screen reader user. So I think that the information should be available for everyone there.
Yeah. And I think that sort of answered the question that Mayanek asked. I would say broadly, if you're building, because Mayanek had asked specifically about how do you make that read more text more unique. In WordPress, most commonly that comes from your theme. So if that's probably just a one-time fix in a theme that would then go out to like every post on your archive pages or in your main blog or the sidebar. I have noticed sometimes with if you're building your site with full site editing and you're using the excerpt block, if you just put read more, then that's all it will say. But what you can do is you could, if you have the ability with your theme to put dynamic text for the title and then hide it with screen reader, with a screen reader wrapper or screen reader tag, that would be a way to do it. I would say fixing those read more links are most commonly kind of a developer level fix, less than like a content creator fix. So.
Yeah.
Barbara had a question about what are things that would impede text resizing on a website?
Sometimes you can use the user scalable set to now a value that is not on the web, so that can restrain the viewport change. That's the most common issue with resizing. I don't know if that answered the question. Also, well, it's a more complex, right? Answer.
Let me share again. I might have something that would be useful here on that. So what Maria was talking about was the zooming and scaling disabled. So
yeah, it's that the meta.
Yeah, this is like in your meta code, and this will stop people even on their mobile phones from being able to like zoom in on the screen and make it bigger. I was on a website that I tried to do this on over the weekend, and I was so mad. I was like, I can't read it, and it won't let me zoom. But the other thing, this I feel a little bit bad for this WordPress theme, but I also don't. This is just a like off the shelf free WordPress theme, but it's the perfect example for a lot of these. But up at the top, it has this grid of featured articles where the photo is the background and you can see the title and the author and the date over it. And if I inspect the containers for these, let's see, I got to figure out where one of them is. But somewhere in here, they have like fixed defined height set on them with a pixel height. Well, right now it just says height 100%. But what I have noticed on this particular site, like if I just zoom in, is I can get to a point where sometimes the content will, like now I've lost the author name. I've zoomed enough that the author name doesn't fit inside the container, right? Or if I go up to 500%, which is more than we normally test to, but like there's certain scenarios, maybe if I'm even down at 400%, but my browser were a little more narrow, now like the title even starts to get cut off. So I would say like a big issue with text resizing frequently is if you have containers that have fixed width or height expectations that don't respond to the size of the font. And so you sort of have to code your grid in a way that it can recognize if the fonts get bigger, and then it can allow other things to get bigger. Let's see. Jen asks, besides screen reader users, are there any benefits to providing alt text?
Yeah. A simple example that occurs to me, let's say that you don't have a good internet connection and your page doesn't load. You are going to have a description there, and it's not going to be unlabeled. You're going to have the image. So, yeah, I would say that that's something that benefits everyone, and also it helps the genes recognize the words.
The that keyboard. Can help with search engine ranking.
Yeah. So it's good for everyone. There are some questions about screen readers. So there are a lot of screen readers that are free. The one that we, there are different combinations as well. The one that we use because for testing purposes, just because it is like universal and is one of the most used, is NVDA combined with Chrome. That's free. That's something that is available. And I really like it because, well, the history right behind the NVDA, how it was created. It was created by blind users and it's open source. So it's really, really, really good. Honestly, you shouldn't see a lot of difference between different screen readers, but there are some numbers.
Let's say yes, or VoiceOver
sometimes treat the content in different ways. One example is that NVDA reads the titles, trying to help the users and read the titles as names. That's something that doesn't happen with VoiceOver, for example. But the difference are not so significant. So I would recommend you to use NVDA if you need to choose one that is like universal. But also Windows has their own built-in screen reader that is narrator. Honestly, I don't know if people really use it. Then
I recommend testing with narrator for that reason.
I don't think the ones NVDA. But else in case you know you have built-in screen then VoiceOver is for Mac and also for iPhone. And then you have for Android as well, you have a built-in screen reader. So it's not something that you have to download. It's something that is already in your devices. You just have to play around and try to use it. Something that I really, really recommend is learn how to turn it off before you turn it on. Otherwise, it may be... But it's a good exercise. In fact, if you use an iPhone, you can use like the... I remember if it's called like curtain or something like that. It really blacks out your screen so you don't see anything and you just navigate. And that's a good exercise that I always recommend to do at least once in your life.
Yes. I will say, you know, not to pitch too hard, but we are having the sale on our courses in a couple of days.
Mm-hmm.
And
mm-hmm.
They are like... they walk you through all of the keyboard shortcuts and all of that. But then I also have 15 different components like tabs, accordions, carousels. And I have good examples and bad examples. So you can hear what a good one sounds like, what a bad one sounds like. And I talk about, oh, this is what I would flag if I were auditing this. So if you want to learn more about screen reader testing, that's a good way. I thought Matt had an interesting question related to screen readers, which is how well do screen readers handle pseudo element content? So that would be like, content that's added in the CSS.
So things that are not really coded properly. That's what they mean.
Yeah. So like, I mean,
as fun.
Unreliable and frequently screen readers won't read any content that's added via CSS instead of in the HTML.
Yeah. Another webinar that I gave related to ARIA, and I explained there how the accessibility API works. And because there is a way, like the accessibility tree works in a way that they just try to distinguish the elements, right? And something that is not properly coded is not going to be interpreted by the screen reader. Let's say that you have a span or a div and you visually make it look like a button or a link and it really works with the mouse. That's something that is going to be completely invisible for a screen reader because the way that the app works is that it's going to find the role, let's say a button, an image, a link, a tab, wherever the component is, and then the name, if it has a name, otherwise it's going to say a label. That's why it's very important to have a name or an ARIA label or something. And then it's going to behave or interact with the element the way that that element is It's supposed to work then segue is activated with a space bar or enter bar or arrow keys, and that's how the focus is going to be managed. So in summary, if something is just like visually appearing like an element but it's not really coded as it should, that's going to be useful for a screen reader. Also for mostly for a keyboard users, I would say. Unless you add that .NET, remember that you have to do a lot of work with JavaScript to make it work. So my advice here is that it is simpler to use a native tag because that is inherently accessible. And it has all the standards there instead of making a custom, unless there is no way to do it. But just keep in mind that the screen reader is not going to interpret it as a real component.
Yeah, I think especially if you're trying to add words to the page with like CSS content, I would assume that many screen readers will not read those words at all. So,
So
it's an important label that you're putting before something. You should actually have it in the HTML and decide to show it or not with CSS, as opposed to just adding the content in the CSS. So, Fernanda asked, how can we address animations such as hover animations, drag animations? Do you want to talk a little bit about animations, Maria?
We should always provide a workaround or another way to manage that. It means it should be keyword operable. Because there are a lot of users that are not going to be able to interact with that, for example, for the draggables. Do you have an example, Amber? That, of course,
can. I'm trying to think if I have one just like off the top of my head on like
how. Yeah, just.
Well, yeah, I don't know if I have one super big as far as animations. I mean, I have an example of tooltips, but I could say like this poor website. This is my example of like all the bad but it's got like scrolling, which pauses when you hover over it, but there's no way to like, if you weren't a mouse user, you can't get this to stop. So that's like an animation. There's a tooltip on this button, which you can't hover over. I don't know if that's sort of worth talking about, but there's actually not a lot of scroll animations on this website.
Yeah. Also, when I can talk a little bit how we test the animations, prefers to reduce motion. So, well, try to find the. I'm going to paste the link, but we have some ways to test this. In Windows, there's a way to. Give me one sec. It seems like I'm not multitask.
Yeah, I can talk for a minute. Oh, there we go.
I'm pressing the link there. So there you can find how to test. Reduce animation. The idea is that if you have this set in your computer or in your browser or in your device, there shouldn't be any animation there. So the way to fix it is to write all CSS animations in a prefers reduce motion media query. And then if the animation is created with JavaScript, you can detect the user's motion preference, which match me. So the idea is that if the user sets these preferences, there shouldn't be animations in there. I have to
significantly less animation. Because it's interesting, it doesn't always mean zero.
No.
But you could maybe make like your... If your buttons get bigger on hover, like you could maybe still do that, but you reduce the speed so it's slower or something. I don't know.
Yeah, it's happy. I hope that that answers the question.
Yeah. Yeah, I would say in general, prefers reduced motion. And then also, if you have anything that's like auto playing, like that ticker we saw, or sliders, videos, sound. Hopefully nobody does that on websites anymore. But having pause buttons and ways for people to stop it is really helpful. So someone said, I found WCAG very difficult to read, as they are almost not useful to me. Are there any tips for learning to read these, or easier guidance that you have? And I could maybe pull it up while you're doing that. Do you want to talk about like how did you learn to understand WCAG?
Well, I agree that WCAG rules are very, very technical, and it's very difficult to understand. But I'm trying to find a simple list that I have. Just give me 1 second, I'm going to share it. But basically, you need to learn the structure, right? First, you have the you have the guideline that is the in this case test alternatives, and then you have the success criterion, and you have the level, you have all the information. You try to understand what does it mean, like what is the intention of, and then what I do is to read the techniques, the sufficient techniques, so I know what I need to fulfill in order to be able to satisfy this. I have to be honest, I always have the understanding page open, because it has a lot of information, like what is the goal, what do you need to do, and why it is important. And then I have a page that kind of summarizes the rules. I'm trying to find it, but I have that in my markers. When I found it, I'm going to share it. But
yeah, I mean, I think the understanding docs are probably more helpful than the main success criterions themselves, because they have a lot.
Yeah, I would say that I don't really read the main success criteria. I use the understanding.
That's it. True.
Yeah. Yeah, it looks like Rosalinda shared Aardvark has a resource as far as learning in plain English. You mentioned earlier, Maria, maybe we can find a link to that. Maria's been writing articles about each success criterion, how to test for them, and ways to meet it in WordPress specific land, with some recommendations for like plugins and things like that. So
yeah,
we don't have them all yet, but
no, because those are a lot. But yeah, I've been working on that. I cannot find the first file, but I can share one, and then you can try to find the rest.
Yeah.
So for example, this one of the January. This is one example.
Yeah, I think Paula shared the latest one too.
Oh, okay.
I think at the top of those, there's a link to the category, and then you can see all of them.
Okay. Yeah, that makes sense.
Paul had said, I've been correcting accessibility problems using my page builder and plugins. The fix often involves using JavaScript to change tags or ARIA labels. Is this legitimate? Do you want to take that question?
I have to read it again. Sorry. What is it?
Yeah, so using JavaScript to change the tags or the ARIA labels, is that legitimate?
I don't know. I think that's a lot of work. What do you think about it?
So, In some cases, you have to use JavaScript. Like, for example, if you're opening and closing an accordion, you have to change the value of aria expanded to true false. And the only way to do that is with JavaScript. So I think like JavaScript is part of if you're doing developer level fixes for accessibility. In the reality of WordPress land, when you are frequently building websites using lots of plugins or themes that other people control the code for, and it's not just a I built custom from scratch everything that is on this website, we do in our remediation work sometimes patch things with JavaScript. It's not always ideal because of the fact that while it may work today, there's no guarantee. Like, let's say you are targeting an element by a class name, and then if the developer of that plugin decides for some reason, and I'm going to say this like a jerk, to change their class, right? That would break a lot of things. It would break your CSS styles. It would break a lot. But that said, like, we've literally had that happen to us. And then now your JavaScript also doesn't work. So it's not a permanent fix in some of those cases. But I will say that we have done it. I always try to first go to the developer and report the issue. I've had mixed results. Some of them, and honestly, like, sometimes it's the free plugins with like a solo dev that responds so fast and they're amazing. And then the ones with giant teams are like, look, we put this in our queue. We'll work on it. And you have no idea when. And you're like, well, I need this fixed now. So I would say, yeah, we do the JavaScript approach. Sometimes that's the only way. I actually have a, there's a video on our YouTube. It's maybe like 15 minutes long, but it's about how I use ChatGPT to fix our accordions because they didn't have what they needed for screen readers. They were only basic keyboard functional. And it's a weirdness where the plugin that we had used got worse and then it got abandoned and it doesn't even exist on WordPress.org, but we had so many accordions and we're like, okay, well, we can't get rid of this until we rebuild our website because we have to go replace all these pages. And so I actually use JavaScript to write a snippet that loads in the footer of all the pages that fixes all of those accordions. And now they work really well. It's not always the best solution, but I think it is frequently the realistic solution in a WordPress situation. When you're not, like, it's not your code, so you can't just go in and edit the plugin or the theme files.
I agree. I think that, well, our approach is always going to say use the native just to ensure that it works. But if you need to make it custom, I guess it's not as sustainable as the native, but it's a good workaround. As I said before in my presentation, the importance is the progress that you make. I mean, it's like a continuous progress. It's not something that is going to be perfect. So I really value that you are trying to fix it at least. And that's very important. That makes me happy.
So there's a couple of questions. I think I'm going to try and like lightning round this.
I share a quick reference guide that I was talking about. It has like a very small summary of each. It's success criteria, something if you are starting, that's a way to see it and not reading the whole understanding, and it's available in several languages, so maybe you can find it
helpful.
Okay, so there's a couple here that I know we don't have time to answer, but I just want to address them briefly, which is Sakawat had asked how to charge for a fully accessible website built with WordPress. And I'm going to say that's a really hard question to answer in like 2 minutes. It probably would be really long, but, and maybe Paula can find this. We have a panel discussion that we did at a previous meetup with a bunch of agency owners where they talked about pricing. Also, if you come, I'm pretty sure also my partner Chris has some content on that that's on our website, and maybe we could dig that up. But if you come to his talk in June, I think that would be a better time to address that. But we'll see if we can find some links to throw for you about pricing. And the same thing about how to make PDFs accessible. But what I do want to tease, I didn't say this now, but earlier in the year, we had Samantha Merritt, who works at the digital service for the government in the United Kingdom. She is coming back for our Tuesday meetup in July, and she is going to literally show taking an inaccessible PDF and how she fixes it. So just looking ahead, that will be a time when you can actually see it. And we do have some others. If you go to the meetup page and you just search through the history, there's a lot of talks about PDFs. Real quick, Mayanek asked, what tools are your go-to tools, both free and paid? So obviously we use our Accessibility Checker plugin because we dog food our own product. What other tools do you use, Maria, that you want to shout out real quick?
I use some extensions. I use Landmarks. It's an extension that is available in Chrome. I use Headings Map as well. And Apps Developer as well. Mm-hmm. The free version. Those are like the go-to. And also, well, I mentioned the color contrast one, right? In a presentation. That's something that my key extensions and tools. And obviously the screen reader.
Mm-hmm. I like TPGI has a desktop application that's free for color contrast checking. I like that one because it's really helpful because you can check all kinds of things. Like, it doesn't even just have to be a browser. Like, it can be an image that's saved on your desktop and it will check it for you. And I will say, too, if you want to see a lot of these in action, if you come on Thursday to the theme testing workshop, which thank you, Corinda, for throwing the link to that in the chat. You can literally watch me test and I'll show some of the tool. I will show a bunch of these tools there and you can get to try them and learn how to use them there. Question about, and I think the same thing about enlarging text. If you can come on Thursday, if you can't come on Thursday, there will be a recording for that as well. But that would be another way to sort of see like how enlarging text fits into a testing workflow. So the last question that we have, and then I think we're going to need to hop off, is I don't know if you have any broader thoughts about email, Maria. Anything different that you do in email, or is it pretty much the same for testing to make sure emails are accessible?
Emails.
Mm-hmm.
I think you're going to play the same. I mean, don't use color to show information and add alt text. Use a structure. Something that really annoys me is when people are responding to a thread and they say, see my comments below. You can use, what I usually do to fix that is to, you can find my comments below in bold and yellow, for example. It doesn't mean that you cannot use color as well. I know that it's easier to do it that way, but what I usually do is to put my initials so screen reader users are able to find my comments below, and don't use just a way of showing information using color, you know? For the rest, I think that it is, if you use the styling and the structure, you're going to be fine. And just think that, I don't know, that try to change your mindset and see if that's printing black and white, is it going to be understandable anyways, or is there information that's going to be missed? Those kind of questions really change the way that you build things.
There
is a lot to say about emails, but
I know, I feel like we should have a follow-up just about this.
Just about emails, yeah.
Yeah, like, yeah. When Because you do use a lot of tables and emails, because that is the reality of email, but you want to make sure you're putting like role presentation on them. But then sometimes it is actually a data table, so you can't by default be like, every table in the email needs a presentation role, because then people miss it. And another mistake I see sometimes, brands like their entire email is an image that they like design.
Yeah, that's something that or something. Images of that. There was once that I was working in a company, and one of my partners was a black person, and he received a recognition, and the recognition was an image of that. So he was unable to see that. What was the recognition? And he had to ask me to read it. So you see something very simple, like using real text instead of an image of text, makes a big difference.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Well, thank you so much, Maria, for presenting and all of the great questions for everybody who hung in with us. I hope to see a bunch of you back here on Thursday. Bye.
Well, thank you so much.
Thanks for listening to Accessibility Craft. If you found this episode valuable, please help us reach more people by subscribing, reviewing or liking the show, and sharing this with your colleagues. Accessibility Craft is a production of Equalize Digital, Inc. Steve Jones composed our theme music. To learn how Equalize Digital can support you on your accessibility journey, visit us at equalizedigital.com.